Okay. All right, we got the signal, everybody. Thanks very much. Welcome. It's our regular city council meeting. It's Tuesday, August 26, 2014. We're at the Veterans Memorial Hall building at 6 p.m. at 209 Surf Street here in Morro Bay. We do have a quorum. All members of the council are present. We do have a quorum, and we'll call the meeting to order. And if you would all join me in a moment of silence, please. Thank you. Thank you. At this time, please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Pannoni, the closed session report, please.
Thank you, Mayor. We had four items on the closed session agenda. All four were discussed, but there was no reportable action taken.
Great. Thank you. And at this time, Mayor and Council members' reports and announcements. And I'll start to my left. George, do you have any announcements to start off with?
Just one. I'm back. No, everybody stops me and asks me about my trip, so I might as well tell you. I had a wonderful time, and I actually got a little raindrops on me. And I did look around for one of those Indians to dance for the rain bringing back, but they're all doing other things like they're in the casino dealing blackjack. So that thing has gone by the side now. So anyway, I enjoyed myself, and thank you very much for your prayers when I was gone and your concern. Thank you very much.
Thanks, George. Christine?
Welcome back, George. Thank you. Welcome, everyone. I really only have one announcement and then a question that I'll put to Mr. Livek, and others may also have that. But if you haven't had a chance to look out into the ocean and see the show the whales have been putting on for about the last week, I think everyone is really aware now, but they've been incredible. So it just sort of puts things in perspective, I think, for all of us to look out there and see 5, 6, 7 spouts at the same time, and you've seen whales breaching and their tails. It's just been incredible. And be careful if you're on the view roads, because I frequently drive on Beachcomber and the people are just stopped and in awe. So just don't run anyone over. If you've seen the whales already, I think there are a lot of people that are coming to see the whales. So it's just an incredible reminder of the everyday beauty that we get to see here in Morro Bay and why it's a special place, and probably why you're all here tonight to talk to us about things in the community. And then in regard to water, fresh, not salt, perhaps those of you who read the Tribune saw the article and then the subsequent editorial about water use in the county. So I've forwarded that to our staff here. So I think I just wanted to perhaps go down with our announcements, because I do know that Mr. Lavick has a response to us that he's going to present. So thank you.
Nancy?
Of course I have an announcement. You know what's coming. The Dahlia Festival, a week from Friday it starts, and there's some things you need to do right now because this is a community event. Young, middle, and a little older, high school age. So you need to call Kathy Keys at 547-1715 and let her know what you want to do. So those are your jobs for this week. Next week, on Friday, the horticultural exhibits can be turned in. That means if you have a flower or a branch or a piece of fruit or a succulent growing in a pot or a group of succulent pots, you bring them to the community center by 11 o'clock in the morning. They'll get put out in the horticultural exhibit, and they'll get judged by people, judges from all over the state of California. So there's another way to play. Okay, the Dahlia Show opens Friday night, September 5th at 5 o'clock with a wine and cheese reception. Bring your own cut dahlias for display if you haven't already turned them in for judging. The Prince and Princess pageant will be right at 5 o'clock, so you'll want to be there to watch them answer questions and walk across the stage. They will have the Los Osos folk dancers following that, and then after the judges have had a chance to get together at 6:30, we will be crowning the princesses and princes, and there will be lots of winners in this event. This is a community all-winners event. Saturday, the parade starts at 10 o'clock, so be there. It goes down Morro Bay Boulevard to Maine, across Maine, back up Harbor, and we'll disperse right out by our very own Dahlia Garden at the Pocket Park. So, let's see, where am I? And then also Dahlia Days will open then. We will have speakers about dahlias, about butterflies in your garden. We'll have information tables, lots and lots of them. There will be dahlias and succulents for sale, and the parade awards will be presented. And at 3:30, there'll be a wonderful raffle that supports the Garden Club's Youth Scholarship and Grants Program. So please plan to participate, plan to come by. It's just going to be lots and lots of fun. Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. How about you, Noah? No? Okay, great. I think we got quite a bit of updates. Thanks, everybody. And Rob, this would be a great time, you know, to get an update on the water, and appreciate the preparation for this, and it'd be great information for everybody, our audience, our community, on the water issues locally and in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to walk over there and put a PowerPoint presentation up, and on our water use, unless I can get some help from AGP or. Up, oh, here they come.
Sorry, Dave.
Sorry, Dave.
That's all right. Par for the course, right?
Yeah.
There we go. Okay, there you go.
You're on it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. This is based on the article and editorial that was in the paper. We wanted to take a look at our water conservation also, and basically present some information to the community that maybe shows us in a little bit different light than the way the Tribune did their analysis on water use. So the Tribune did ask for data for January to June of 2013 and 2014 to compare the water use, and everybody saw the results in the paper that were 1.5% above where we were last year for overall city use, and you know 20-something percent for the city facilities. So, is Morro Bay conserving water? Well, we announced our increased water conservation effort at the end of January. That means the results didn't really show up into the March bill. So February's usage shows up in the March bill. How do we compare to the state of California? This is a graphic that was published earlier this year in the San Jose Mercury News that showed overall water use through the state of California, you know, ranging from in the South San Francisco area, 98 gallons per person per day gross water use, to the high in the city of Vernon, because they have such a high industrial base, of 94,000 gallons per person per day. So where does Morro Bay sit? If we look at what we've done so far this year, we're at the lower end of the continuum of regional water use. We're at 108 gallons per person per day in 2013 and 100 July utility newsletter. We send letters to potential water conservation violators reminding of current measures. Our field staff has little door hangers. If they see water running down the street and nobody's home, they can hang it on the door. And we're planning on a special water conservation newsletter in September. Residential water uses. Residential water use in Morro Bay, if you just look at those numbers, percent change from last year, Overall is minus 8%. And we're down to about 64 gallons per person per day if you just look at residential water use. So that's pretty low. If you know, that's a couple of showers, a couple of loads of laundry, some hand washing, brushing your teeth, and not a whole lot more. We'll get you to that 64 gallons. Commercial water use. We've seen overall a 1% reduction in water use since last year. And we thought it'd be interesting to compare that to motel occupancy. And you can see we've had some increases in occupancy that may account for some of that difference. We are a tourism-driven economy, so as our businesses get more business, we will use more water. City water usage. So we divided this up into landscaping-type usage, the first column over there, and the second column is our city facilities, like this building, restrooms, things that are connected to sewer. So on our parks, we've actually overall, for the first part of this year, cut our water use by about 5%. We had some first couple months that were some challenges with some water leaks that we used more water than we probably should have, but we've made strides, repaired those leaks, made adjustments in irrigation timers, so we're doing much, much better. And then our city facilities, overall, we've reduced our water use in our sewer city facilities by an average of 15% so far since last year. I don't expect anybody to, that's my favorite line in a PowerPoint presentation, you make the data so small that nobody can read it. But what we're trying to show here is you see a bunch of those colored lines. The line on the bottom layer is our water use so far. And this is the last 7 years of water use data. So this is the lowest water use year in the last 7 years. What more can we do? Residential. There's not much more we can do to, there's a few outliers that, you know, we need to work with and help them understand that maybe now's not the time to have the greenest lawn in town. But basically, residential, keep doing what we're doing. Probably can't conserve a whole lot more unless we go to very drastic measures, kind of like Cambria has done. Commercial, more education, maybe look at some rebates and incentives for making some changes in the types of plumbing fixtures they have, especially in the restrooms. Work with our largest users where we get the most bang for the buck, the larger hotel motels, and then a few other large users. City, what can we do? We could go brown. Basically, look at stop irrigating sections of parks. We could replace, we've done a great job of replacing plumbing fixtures, modifying them to be low flow. We could go to ultra low flow plumbing fixtures and waterless urinals in our city restrooms. Our higher water users that are sewered are actually our restrooms that have showers on the waterfront, and perhaps reduce shower times. Educational signage in the restrooms, basically reminding, and the boat rents off station, reminding folks that we are in a drought and keeping that in the forefront. If you public wants more water conservation tips, we have some websites here, and I'll put this PowerPoint on our website, so if people want to review it, it'll be up there. And I'll be happy to answer any questions, and hopefully I made it in about 5 minutes.
Thanks, Rob. Any questions for Mr. Livick on the left?
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I think that when we read the story on Sunday, a lot of people were like, what's going on in Morro Bay? So I appreciate you responding, and I think this would be great to put on the website and have people learn and I think include some of these things. Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks. Nancy or Noah, anything?
Yeah, briefly, just to follow up on Christine's comments, I think great presentation, Rob, and thanks for getting this together with the other staff. Just from what I understand, we already have gone brown in some of the less used areas within the city park system. There are areas that were being irrigated that we've turned off already. Can I get a confirmation on that outside of those real high usage?
I'll let Mr. Woods respond to that.
Good evening. Some of the areas that we've targeted that are being browned out have been targeted for elimination. And their use isn't like Lila Kaiser, where we have athletic play and we have a safety issue when things get browned out. The turf that's out in front here, like the Vets Hall, this is scheduled to be removed, and therefore staff is now working on eliminating or separating the irrigation so we can isolate the turf and then shut it off. So we are targeting areas that will be shut off and eliminated, and they'll be browned out now. But there are some turf that's borderline, has some browning, but not totally browned out.
Okay. And then to follow up on the conversation about rebate incentives with commercial and some additional education, what's the driver there? I know we did a lot of work within the water equivalency units regarding updates and retrofits. Are you waiting for the council to call for some future discussion on that, or are you already thinking about bringing some things forward to talk about?
Well, quite frankly, until we really looked at this level of detail, as with a lot of cities, we're thinking it's the residential water usage that's driving the picture, but it's really not. So now we know where to focus our efforts on that education, and I don't think we're going to be waiting for council. We will have to bring back, you know, fiscal issues that we'll need council to authorize. But as far as education goes, we have that in the budget. We're just going to change the focus of our education and not focus so much on the homeowner that is already conserving well, but, you know, working with our local businesses and helping them to find out more ways that they can make a difference in the city's water use.
Okay, and then in terms of an incentive-type program or additional rebates, is that also part of the package you're starting to look at?
That would have to come back to council to get authorization for that, you know, any rebates or fiscal impact issues. And be remiss if I didn't mention Damaris Hansen put most of this data together and very short notice, and I need to thank her publicly for just jumping on this and doing the analysis that was needed.
Good job, Rob. Thanks. And Damaris? Nancy?
I just want to say thank you. You did a great job. And I have a couple of questions that have come up in the last few days. Could you review for us the days that you're allowed to water your yard, what days are odd and what days are uneven? And I had some friends who got in a discussion the other day, and I couldn't remember.
It's on the city website, and I quite frankly can't remember which side
are. The only one.
I know you can't water on Mondays, so but let me get to the city's website, and maybe you can ask another question, and I will be able to get that answer for you.
While you're looking that up, somebody also mentioned, I don't know if it was here in Los Osos, that somebody got fined $250 for watering on the wrong day. We don't have water police going around checking to make sure what you're doing, do we?
We do. We have not fined anybody. Our goal is to reduce water use, not to fine people. So we've sent out to folks that are not around or we can't talk to, or folks that are less than receptive. We followed that up in writing, and it'll be escalating. We have not issued any administrative citations as of yet, but it is always a possibility. That's part of our requirements with the state of California, is the provision to fine folks that are wasting water.
So do you have someone in the office driving around checking folks out, or is it just by complaint?
It's mainly by complaint, or as our water crews are out in the field, if they or any of our field crews are out there and they see excessive water use, typically the first contact is to knock on the door and did you know that you have water running down the street? Nobody's home. We hang a flyer with some water conservation tips and a note that says, you know, please be conscious of your water use. And follow that up with a phone call, letter. Ultimately, although we have not done this, is an administrative citation with an increasing fine for those that would not cooperate. And let's see if I can get...
Would you like to do the presentation?
Sure.
Okay, great. Yep. And we can follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. My name is Brian French. I'm a Morro Bay resident and solar installer. And I very much appreciate this opportunity to be here tonight and present on the solar installation at the Teen Center. Brief background on myself is I am a mechanical engineer. I graduated from Cal Poly here in 1993. Been a resident of Morro Bay, me and my family, going on a little over 13 years now. And the name of my business is Estero Bay Solar Solutions. I've got my contact information up on the slide here, and it'll come back up again at the end of my presentation. So real quickly, just to give everyone a little background on the project and how it came about, is I viewed this as an opportunity to contribute to a program and a building that I hold in very high regard. I think the purpose of Rockies to provide a safe place for students to gather after school hours is very valuable to a community, and probably something I could have benefited from as I was going through high school to keep me out of some trouble. Again, I hold the facility and what it does in high regard, and it's also struck me as a good opportunity to have a public installation here and let the community see what the solar potential along the coastline here really is, because I think there's some misperceptions about it, and I'll get to that in just a moment. So when I first approached the city about the my initial proposal was to just do a straightforward donation of a very small-scale solar array, something that could be used for demonstration or educational purposes. And at my initial meeting with Mr. Woods and Mr. Wilcox, they expressed some interest on what it would take to actually expand on the project size and make it capable of covering the entire energy use for the building for the entire year. That obviously brought up some challenges. What I was coming forward was with a very limited budget. The city obviously hadn't set aside money for a capital improvement of this nature. Why should they? It was my idea. So it resulted in a little bit of brainstorming on how we could actually get from what I was proposing to the ultimate system size that we ended up with. And that's where we started talking about the concept of a project partnership, where any company that would come forward and contribute to the project could also be recognized in exchange on the city's website, on my business website, and also down at the facility. And it proved to be a very valuable incentive because, well, otherwise we wouldn't be here talking about it today. And we had great involvement from a lot of the manufacturers that I work with on a routine basis. Just real quickly on some of the project specifics, the historical energy use on the building was averaging around 9,300 kilowatt hours per year. After assessing the solar potential of the site, that came out to be a system size of just under 6 kilowatts. And it has now been in service almost a year. Next month will be a one-year anniversary of the system. And part of this project was to make sure that the public would have access to see how the system is performing. And I'm going to get into that here in just a bit. Here is actually how you can get to that monitoring data. It is embedded on my website, which hopefully is easy to remember. It's eb-ss.com. I have a tab that's devoted to the Teen Center with some background information, and the monitoring data will come up. I'll get into that in just a second. You can also get to it through the city's website. If you do a search in the search box there of just Rockies Solar, it'll be the top search that's returned. Click on that page. It'll give some background information on the project, and at the bottom, there's a link again to the system performance. Also, if you happen to be walking by the facility, we now have an interpretive panel that's been installed at the sidewalk. And there are QR codes on that panel. The QR codes will link to either one of the company's websites that contributed to the project, or again, you can link to see the system performance. If you don't have a QR code scanner on your phone, also the full web addresses are printed just below the QR codes. And if all else fails, just do a search for Morro Bay Teen Center Solar, and that will come up for you. And now I'd like to show you a quick overview of how the monitoring data comes up. Let's work from here. Okay. So whatever path you take, you should hopefully end up here. And again, right at the top of the website, again, is the background information on the project and mentioning of the companies that contributed to it. And as you continue to, as you continue to scroll down, you come across the data. And just an overview of how this is presented is across the top, you'll see the daily values of how much energy was produced that day, what the current power output from the system is, and what the system peak production for the day was and what time that occurred. So going further down, you see this grid arrangement of blue squares. And essentially what this is, might be able to make out the QR codes along the bottom for all the different links that you can explore. And lastly, I did want to acknowledge the project partners that contributed to this project, because again, it would not have happened without their help. Quick Mount is a manufacturer of the roof mounts and flashings that attach everything to the building. Professional Solar Products manufactures the rails and clamps that holds the panels in place. Solar World is the panel manufacturer that contributed to the project. Miner's Ace Hardware gave a contribution to help offset the cost of incidentals, wire, and conduit on the project. And last but not least, the City of Morro Bay with Mr. Woods and Mr. Wilcox coming to the table with this project partnership idea that was obviously very pivotal in making this project happen. So that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Brian, thanks very much. And Mr. Woods, if you might want to follow up, and then we've got one more presentation that we'd like to move on to as well.
The only thing I can really say is that what a great partnership it's been. We're really looking forward to our payback, which is somewhere around 3 years and some change. And so more of these partnerships are out there. We believe in solar. We've got some solar panels, 11.2 array, that's over on the community center, which is looking to be expanded. And the one that Brian has done with us over at the Teen Center is just an example of what can happen here on the coast for small residential applications. And for the Teen Center, it's basically taking us off the grid. We're going to go all solar, and we're going to pay for the bill. It'll be 100%. It is now. We're paying back a little bit every year, but in 3 years, total self-sufficiency through solar, which is really a cool way to go. So,
great. Brian. Any remarks? Any closing?
Just thanks. Thanks all around for your great work.
George, Christine?
George? I think just briefly, it shows you that in foggy Morro Bay, you can actually see that we do quite well on solar. So it's just something to remember moving forward. Thanks.
Thank you for making that point for me.
Brian, thanks for coming forward. Appreciate it. And the education.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Thank you. And at this, yeah, all right. Good job. At this time, the next act on the presentation today, Ms. Jessica Berry from San Luis Obispo County of Governments. Always a pleasure to work with Ms. Berry from the SLOCOG board as a representative for Morro Bay. And this is an exciting project as well. So, Jessica, thanks for coming today, sharing some information with Morro Bay on what this Chorro Valley Bike Trail is about. And it's all yours.
Thank you, Mayor Irons, members of the council. My name is Jessica Berry, and I am with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. Very briefly, I'll go over what SLOCOG is. SLOCOG is a regional transportation planning agency. So our board is actually made up of all of the county supervisors and a representative from each of the incorporated cities. So Mayor Irons is on our board. And our board works collaboratively to make decisions about funding transportation-related improvements that have a regional nature to them. So that may include things like the Los Osos Valley Road Interchange is a project we have funding on. We fund regional bus systems, and we fund bike and pedestrian pathways. We also do some planning, so that's what I'm here to talk to you about today. I would also like to briefly introduce Jeff Brubaker, who is my coworker, and he is actually going to be your Morro Bay's representative, staff representative from SLOCOG. So you'll be seeing his face more than mine. I am here today, though, to talk about the Chorro Valley Trail, which was a project I worked on. So this is just briefly what SLOCOG does. We have various roles that we play. We do transportation planning. So this is sort of a long-range plan, the Chorro Valley Trail Study, that I'll talk to you about. We have an overarching plan, our regional transportation plan, that we're working on right now. So I'll let you know more about that at the end of the presentation. We also do a lot of project funding. So once we have our planning documents in place, we actually work with our local agencies to fund projects that have that regional component to them. We also have a division that does outreach, our rideshare division in 511. They do safe routes to school programs and outreach activities, employer trip reduction programs, and they do the annual bike month and rideshare month efforts. So rideshare month is actually coming up. That's the month of October, so you'll probably hear more about that on the news and on the radio. They do a big outreach effort associated with that. And then we also do data services. We are the census data affiliate for this region. We have land use and traffic models that we use help to support our planning efforts as well as local agency planning efforts. And we do mapping projects. So to talk about the Chorro Valley Trail Study, this is a really wonderful project, and it's been sort of a labor of love, and it's something that several key members of the community have worked very hard to make this study happen. First of all, Supervisor Bruce Gibson was instrumental in the discussions that began about the trail study in 2011. So in 2011, we got a grant to do this trail study. We actually didn't start it until November 2013, but that was when we got and started on the study. We hired Rincon Consultants to do the majority of the work, and they had a sub, Cuesta Engineering, and they did an excellent job putting together the study. We also, because it was a small budget, SLOCOG did most of the outreach efforts. So we have a website, and it's actually still live, chorrovalleytrail.com, where you can find information about the study and what we did. You'll also find the draft of the plan, or the report that was approved by the SLOCOG board in August at that location. So the goal of this study was really to identify what we think is the most feasible alignment. And that is going to enable us to take the next step, which is to do an initial study, which is an environmental document, to figure out what can we build, what's the environmental sensitivity, and what we're really looking for segments of independent utility. So we actually, through the study, identified two or three, if you count them, you can look at them several ways, two or three segments that we would probably identify as segments that would move forward together, with the ultimate goal of building that trail all the way from Cal Poly out to Morro Bay. So the next several slides, I'm just going to go over the alignments we looked at, and they are a little bit hard to see, and I apologize for that. But they are also all available on the website, and you can pull up each map and look at the location you're interested in looking at. I'll probably move a little quickly through the first three slides because they are all between Cal Poly and Cuesta College. So the segments that we identified were really Cal Poly to Cuesta College, another segment from Cuesta to the large piece of property that's owned by Department of Fish and Wildlife that intends to have public access on it, and then a segment that would go from there to Morro Bay. Or conversely, you could look at the segment from Cuesta College to Morro Bay also as a segment of independent utility. So we looked at a couple different alignments. Let me see if I can find my pointer here. So we looked at an alignment that would start at the railroad safety trail in Morro Bay, on the Cal Poly campus, where the current railroad safety trail ends. The idea behind this alignment is that the users that are interested in staying on using a Class 1 don't mind going a little bit out of their way to stay off of the highway. We also did, though, look at an alignment that was right on Highway 1. Get the hang of this here. Which you can see that's in purple there. That alignment is, while more convenient from the downtown, is a little trickier to use or to build because there's a steep slope right there. So it would require quite a bit of cut to fit in a trail there. So what we identified was that the better alignment would be to start at the end of the railroad safety trail, travel through the campus that's Mount Bishop Road at the start, and then a new trail segment be built. You can see kind of at the top left corner of that slide is where it would continue north and west through the Cal Poly campus. And then we looked at, well, another thing I'd like to point out about this particular valley and this trail is that there are very few landowners. So we were actually able to meet with every one of the landowners that would be affected by this trail and the alignment. So that was a really unique and wonderful feature about this valley is there aren't very many owners. So we were able to sit down with all of them. So leaving Cal Poly, there's a segment that is kind of, it's right in front of California Men's Colony. We actually don't touch any of their property. I'm not going to get the hang of this pointer, so I'm just going to stop using it. So there's a segment in front of California Men's Colony that's actually not owned by CMC. It's part of Camp San Luis Obispo. And interestingly, one of the strongest proponents that we met with in the valley was Camp San Luis Obispo. They're very supportive of the trail. So we're excited about that, and we want to find ways to move forward more quickly with this trail alignment or with the trail study itself. Continuing west, it would stay, and all so far what I've shown you, the most feasible alignment has been on the north side of Highway 1 or the north/east side of Highway 1 through Cal Poly, along CMC, and then crossing over Kern Avenue. We looked at a couple of places where we could cross over Highway 1 because another effort that we made was to not, we didn't want to use any location where we would put cyclists in danger, obviously. So we're using the signals. But there's also an undercrossing at Camp Slow at Dairy Creek that the people that we met with at Camp Slow were open to having a path go under there. So that is a more environmentally sensitive area, so that would be looked at more in depth as part of the environmental process, but that would be an option. The other option is we intend to open that up for public access, and they will work on an access management plan at the next, once they're done with the Carrizo management plan, so that's their next project. So we stayed primarily on the south side, outside of Caltrans right-of-way, in the along the property through there. The area that gets trickiest, excuse me, I went the wrong way there, the area that gets trickiest is that there is one private landowner that owns property on both sides of Highway 1 just to the west of the ecological preserve. I should take that back. There's actually a couple of tricky areas. One is another just right at Canet Road. I'm sure you're all familiar. Canet is actually it comes off of Highway 1 and it turns sharply to the west, and there's very little space between Highway 1 and where Canet Road is right there. So that will be a very tricky engineering location that we'll have to deal with because there's kind of it's riparian through there, and it's close to the road, and there's not a lot of right of way. And we've met with Caltrans several times, and we want to find ways to work with them in the future because there are segments that we looked at that were very much just off the shoulder in their right of way, and that includes the area that was where the private landowner is there, which is just to the west of Canet Road. And then the goal would be, would be to connect it to Quintana Road and then have travelers move along Quintana Road, preferably with a designated separated facility there. Of course, the tricky location is at the intersection of Quintana Road and South Bay Boulevard, and that's an area where we would want to do some really good engineering for that very difficult intersection. So high speed, and you're all familiar with it. So we would want to, we're going to be careful about how we put cyclists out at that location or pedestrians. So the goal again is to develop a Class 1 multi-use for bikes and pedestrians through that corridor. Essentially, the SLOCOG board has accepted the study, and we turned it over to SLO County Parks. And we actually worked very closely with them through this process. Elizabeth Cavanaugh from County Parks and I did all of the outreach together and all of the workshops and all the meetings. So they've been very involved. The next step for them would be to do that initial study, which is actually a study they could do that shouldn't be particularly expensive, and it should be able to tell them where what kind of environmental document they'll need. The Bob Jones trail is in an environmental impact report document, and that's taken a very long time. So that initial study is going to tell us really how realistic this trail is and when. And we also look for fundable segments that we can put into our regional transportation plan, which is our guiding document that we update every 5 years. It's a 20-year document, and it is underway right now. So we will have quite a bit of outreach associated with that, and that will be all available on the SLOCOG website. And then I didn't actually include the website, but it's just slowcog.org, very easy to find. So if you have any questions about what SLOCOG does, you can look there. You can link to the Chorro Valley Trail from that location as well.
Jessica, thank you very much. I don't know if there's any questions for the board, but a great presentation for both the SLOCOG perspective on the partnership that is involved in the county, and then the trail itself, just kind of educational piece on the potential to have this connection from San Luis Obispo to Morro Bay. So pretty exciting. It's great to bring this to Morro Bay and present that to us. So thanks very much. Are there any questions either to the left or to the right of the council?
I have just one. I think this sounds absolutely marvelous. Yet, as the city's representative at the Mintz Colony, I've sat in with the meetings, and they have some concerns about a bike path that goes by the prison. Mm-hmm. Have you looked at all at the possibility of crossing it over at that signal and going on the other side?
We did explore that option, and it's actually identified in the study. So while we did say the most feasible alignment is that northern alignment, the initial study will actually have to look at that southern alignment more in depth as well. So it's still in the study. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I just know that they had some very, very mm-hmm. serious concerns about it. Bike path right in front of the prison.
Yeah, and also I would point out that because bicyclists can currently use Highway 1, there probably will be segments where we will route people back onto Highway 1 where they are currently allowed to ride bikes. It's just not as appealing for the everyday cyclist.
Yeah. Great. Thanks very much, Jessica. Appreciate it. And that's just a great example of the partnership we have with SLOCOG. I think we need to recognize our bike committee here in Morro Bay has been instrumental in a lot of these projects and input, so good to recognize them. I think, you know, SLOCOG has been a product. We've seen the advantage of our bridge that's going to be going forward and also the Harbor Walk. So thanks very much, Jessica. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right.
And tell me, because I forgot. I personally have been in Morro Bay area since the early 80s, and I came from a corporate sales background, but my passion was always and still is fashion. I always dreamed to have my own dress boutique, and when corporate America downsized, I said, good time for me to get out and start my own business, and that's what I'm so proud of. We have been in the location of 325 Morro Bay Boulevard for 16 years that I've owned it, and that's pretty remarkable. I have had the pleasure of serving locals and tourists alike, and Queen's Closet has been a member of the Chamber and also the Morro Bay Merchants Association, which I was past president of. I believe in shopping local and buying local. Morro Bay businesses depend on it. Whether you are planning a vacation, a cruise, or even a wedding, maybe a casual luncheon, we have casual to formal wear to fit any occasion. We carry sizes 14 through 5X and one of the last plus size stores on the Central Coast. Several styles are made here in the USA that we have brought in, and I am so proud that we carry familiar brands such as Alfred Dunner, Kathy Daniels, Aaron London, Caribbean Joe, and many more. Remember, we do have fashions that fit with new arrivals weekly. Why drive to San Luis when you can come see us first? Remember, we have free parking and personal service. We are located at 325 Morro Bay Boulevard, across from Bank of America, and in between Beads by the Bay and La Petite Boutique. We are open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday from 10 to 5 and Sunday 11 to 3. Or you can call us at 772-4288 for any special requests. Join us for some retail therapy, and thank you for all your support.
Thank you, Pam. Okay, now we're appreciate that, Pam, for coming out and your continued successful business for the last 16 years. So now we're moving into public comment. And this is a time for everybody to speak on items not on the agenda. And we'll refrain from clapping here on out. We'll get into public comment. So those who'd like to speak on items not on the agenda may do so now. Please come forward, state your name. You have 3 minutes.
I am first. I want to get this over with. Good evening, City Council, city personnel, and citizens. My name is Rigmore, and I was going to come down here because of the fish that was going to be sent, but instead all other things came out because we had a big discussion over the weekend with some ladies, and people were angry. There, someone had a garage right stuck up against the fence, and they'd gone to the city, couldn't find out if that was the code at that time, if that was legal, didn't want to give names and stuff like that. So I got my pen started going. Many people, I included, have been annoyed and frustrated for a long time in regards to all the difficult rules, codes, and regulation that has developed over many years to probably benefit some and make it difficult for others. Regarding building a home, owning a home, or a commercial building, or doing improvements. And God forbid you want to start a business in Morro Bay. Many old-timers may not care since they already got their pie, and city personnel understand what they read. But for many others, it is like fluttering in the wind. I sincerely believe some scrutinizing and simplifications are in order. I understand we have a new, very knowledgeable planner. Maybe he can sort it out and make it simple for us. It took me until last week to really understand that if you want to rent a space for a new business here, there is lots to check out to be sure everything is okay with the city. It is not just to pay for a business license and that the space has walls, a roof, and doors, and do not open to the public until you have completed business license or you are in violation of many city codes. Same for new home builders who can meet a whammy after they have complied with all rules, codes, etc. There could be a mob of neighbors and others who do not like
to speak at this time. Please do so. Come forward. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Irons and members of the council. My name is Robert Krause, and I live at 421 Arbutus Avenue. Under current interpretation made by Morro Bay's Building and Planning Department of Title 17, Zoning, Section 174840, citizens who live on a 50 by 100 foot R1 lot who have garden sheds, greenhouses, playhouses, bird aviaries, etc., which are less than 120 square feet and not in need of a building permit, may have an illegal structure if they are not 10 feet from the rear fence, 5 feet from the side fence, and 6 feet from a building. The Morro Bay Planning Department refers to Code Section 174840 and Section 172440 as its reasons behind sending my wife and I a warning of administrative citation. Looking at Section 174840, subsection A, construction timing, what a garden shed or playhouse built at the same time as their main building. In subsection B, attachment, what garden shed has a common roof system as a main building? Subsection B is also refers to the height and coverage requirement. Again, this subsection is referring to living space and footprint of a home. When did the city start considering square footage of a playhouse and greenhouse as part of lot coverage requirements? If anything, our garden shed would fit into the category of temporary structure. At a recent meeting with the Planning Commission, Commissioner Luer pointed out another inconsistency with how this ordinance is being applied. Why does the city in Title 17 zoning, Section 174845, allow a detached garage, which can be 2 to 3 times the size of a garden shed, be placed only 1 foot from the rear fence and 1 foot from the side fence? The city's interpretation of this ordinance just doesn't make sense. I have a hard time believing that the city of Morro Bay wants to prevent homeowners from placing garden sheds, playhouses, greenhouses, etc. in their backyards. But the way this ordinance is being interpreted, the city is doing exactly that, restricting and, in cases of small backyards, eliminating all backyard structures. Section 1748-40 and 1724-40 of Title 17 zoning were never meant to apply to garden sheds, playhouses, greenhouses, etc. For this reason, I am requesting that the City Council take the necessary action to dismiss all outstanding warnings of administrative citations that have been placed for all non-permitted, non-habitable structures that are less than 120 square feet and that have been deemed illegal due to Chapter 17 zoning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Krause. Anybody else for public comment?
Good evening, Mayor, City Council members, and people of Morro Bay. My name is Kyle Schaefer. I live at 218 Dune Street. I'm before you this evening to let you know about an event happening called the Never Quit Challenge, a personal watercraft sea and land adventure for select military veterans and combat wounded to benefit veteran charities. It's also a moving memorial to a tribute ride for those killed in action. The ride will span over 600 miles from Morro Bay to San Diego over 4 days. The start will be on September 8th at 7 o'clock from the Morro Bay launch ramp. I encourage people to come down and see them on a safe voyage. And it will conclude on September 11th, the anniversary of the terrorist attacks. There are three charities, the Phoenix Patriot Foundation, and the Station Foundation, the MARSOC Foundation, and these are all veteran charities. The big thing is on September 7th from 6 to 8, right here in the Veterans Building, come down and meet the people going. There will be four combat wounded veterans and 30 veterans helping out with the footwork. There will be food and beverage here. And there will be a raffle of donated items. All donations are tax deductible, and it'll be a great event. If you have any questions, you could contact Barry. Phone number's up there. It's rather small. There's a couple flyers in the back. If you can't make it and want to support, you can make donations at www.neverquitchallenge.com. I encourage citizen city support. It should be a good event. So thank you for your time. Have
great,
a good
Kyle.
Evening.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Iron Ordinance. Conspicuous by its timing, that same neighbor is once again teaming up with the Morro Bay Planning Department with a garden shed complaint, which apparently hasn't harmed or bothered these bordering neighbors for the past 9 years, because no complaint has been submitted until this present time. It just doesn't make sense to me why the city continues to support a Morro Bay resident who is hurting not only us, but their contiguous neighbors as well. Using the municipal code as it is currently being interpreted, these disgruntled neighbors have been empowered by the city to continue their bullying tactics by exercising their new self-appointed position as neighborhood code enforcement agents for the city. Council members, is this the environment that the city of Morro Bay wants its citizens to perpetuate? I am imploring you to take the necessary action to dismiss our warning of administrative citation until such a time that you are able to examine this particular subjective interpretation of garden shed placement and not subject us or any other citizens of Morro Bay to this bullying atmosphere of neighbor reporting on neighbor when no harm is being done. As you examine these extenuating circumstances, we can only hope that you agree that garden sheds,
greenhouses, and playhouses be given, at a minimum, the same setback requirement status that is currently given to a detached garage. A common sense approach by the council can hopefully restore, in some measure, the peaceful sanctity for our home and solace for the potential thousands of others who could find themselves in the exact same circumstance. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anybody else for public comment?
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, and viewers. Trina Doherty, Morro Bay resident. Tonight, I'm wearing my favorite three hats, that of AGP Video, Morro Bay Friends of the Library, and Eco Rotary Club of Morro Bay. First, I'd like to encourage any of you putting on an event or special gathering to send a flyer via email to me, Trina, at agpvideo.com, so that it can be put up on Channel 20. Ideally, this would be in the form of a PowerPoint in landscape orientation. If you don't have that prepared, just send a flyer or a poster electronically, and we can create a slide for you. This is a great way to enhance your advertising at no charge. Secondly, the library remodel is in full swing and, according to the county, right on target. Our next book sale will be in April, so please continue to save up your book donations. The temporary library will take a few books at this time for the sale, but for larger collections, it would be greatly appreciated if you could store them up for a little while, and we can have a super wonderful kickoff sale next year. Lastly, the Eco Rotary Club of Morro Bay is celebrating Membership Month, and we invite you to attend any of our club meetings as a way of getting to know us. This Thursday, August 28th, we will have the NEP as our program, updating us on their recent eelgrass restoration project, which we participated in. Upcoming programs include the SIP, which is vineyards that are participating in sustainable practices, Bioneers about their October conference, and the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, to name a few. As many of you know, Eco Rotary has adopted Bayshore Bluffs Park as one of our ongoing projects, and you're always welcome to join us on our work days. Other projects include our annual Eco Fair, and this year we were able to send 100 solar reading lights to Pace Universal Girls School in India, 40 to Hansen, Nepal, and have several to hand out locally. We have recently joined the Chamber and are very excited about networking with all of our local businesses. Our ribbon-cutting ceremony will be September 24th at Bayshore Bluffs Park. Another exciting event that we have coming up is our e-waste recycling on November 1st. It will be held at Coast Electronics parking lot from 9 to 1. And this is a fundraiser for our club and helps to ensure that all things electric do not end up in the landfill. So clean out your garages for old PCs and TVs and bring them on down. Anything with a cord will be recycled. So to leave you with a little food for thought, we're very proud. We are a very proud Rotary Club, following the Rotary motto of self-service above self, as you can see from one of our members, Brian French, who was just talking about his installation. As members, we try to do our best to live by the four-way test. Of the things that we do and say, is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? And will it be beneficial to all concerned? So thanks for listening, and come join us.
Thank you, Trina.
Finally, fun event brought to you again by your Morro Bay 50th participants and committees. We have about 30 some odd participants right now. We believe we will hit our goal of 50. I see five participants right there. That could, maybe you five could put us over the edge. We need you to contact us through the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. There is a form to fill out with a short little bio telling us about you, our participants, about our community, about a business who was maybe here for 45 years, like Queen's Closet. They're almost at their 50th anniversary mark. We have many participants coming down the street. Like I said, we have Morro Bay High School's marching band, the cheer team. We are honored and proud to have Bozo Coroscelli as our Grand Marshal. He has honored us by accepting our invitation to be our parade Grand Marshal. Some of the other participants are Morro Bay in Bloom, Mike's Barbershop. They get the award. They returned their entry form, very first one. Cry Construction, the Sea Cadets with a junior color guard, and Project Surf Camp. We're inviting all of you to come out. We're hoping to see Rotary, City Council, City Staff. We'll be having fire trucks and police car and a trolley. And we hope to see lots of kids. It is the opening of soccer, so bring your kids before or after their games or around their games. They can join in the fun. Meet us at City Park, where we're staging at 9 a.m. Call the Chamber of Commerce at 805-772-4467 for more information. Thank you so much, and enjoy Dahlia Days. Come down and enjoy the parade.
Thank you, Joan.
Good evening. Susan Stewart, resident of Morro Bay, owner of Beads by the Bay on Morro Bay Boulevard, and member of the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. Couple things just wanted to mention. This was Barry Ross's last day in business, 25 years at Morro Bay Furniture. The doors are closed. He's retiring and hopefully going to enjoy the coming years, hopefully another 25 more of good retirement, but sad to see him go. Also wanted to give a mention to Limos, which is doing a beautiful, beautiful redevelopment of their property. People should go down, take a look. I think they're taking a lot of extra steps to make this just a stunning addition to the town on an awkward little corner, but it's beautiful, and I think we should be very proud of them. Also wanted to mention this coming weekend is Art in the Park. That will be Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Again, it's an event that brings people to town but also supports our art center, one of the three events that they do that brings money to them and enhances our community in a lot of ways. Then, of course, the next weekend, Dahlia Days, with all those events you heard about. Following that, on September 13th and 14th, is the Avocado Margarita Festival. Some of you guys haven't come. You ought to try it out this year. It's a celebration of our local avocados to provide information about them in terms of their agricultural value. I know my son has found Morro Bay avocados in Boston in the Whole Foods markets there. So our avocados are some of the best grown anywhere, and we should celebrate them. There will be a $5 admission fee, but I would like people to know that a good percentage of that is going to support the high school music boosters. There are also fundraising events for the Morro Bay High School cheerleaders, the athletic boosters, and Rotary Club. So just a reminder that, again, these events bring people to our town who might not otherwise come on these weekends, but also support the institutions and organizations that are putting them on. Tuesday and Saturday are odd days, and Wednesday and Sunday are even days for watering, just so people know. I know because I have an odd number business and an even number home. Thanks.
Thanks, Susan.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. Dr. John Hedding wearing my health hat today. Wanted to remind you that it would be sad and you would be remiss missing any council meetings in December or January with the flu. Thusly, the flu shot season has begun. Locally, we have flu shots available at Morro Bay Drug. For adults this year that are 65 years or older, they are recommending the high-dose vaccine, and that is fully covered by Medicare. So as I look around the room, I won't mention those that might be able to get free flu shots, but there are a number of us. And secondarily, for those that are under age 8, they're recommending the nasal spray. I do that. One is through the skin test. However, there is another screening for high-risk versus low-risk patients or individuals, and that will rule out the need for a skin test in about 95% of individuals. And so our partnership with the PTA is to offer that to all volunteers locally as opposed to having to go to the county to get that done. The county charges $20 for the screen. Ours is half of that price. And if you do have to have via the screen the skin test, we're also offering a reduced rate for that. So a good partnership, and just wanted to make sure the community knew that that was available. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Anybody else for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. And any responses or remarks from council at this point to my left?
Sure.
You want to start, Noah?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on the comments about the Muni Code and the interpretation and discussion of accessory buildings versus temporary buildings and so forth. And I had a chance to talk with our planning department manager today just to get an update. And correct me if I'm wrong, but that discussion is occurring at the Planning Commission at their next meeting, September 2nd. Or actually not the next meeting, but the September 2nd meeting. And that would be an excellent place to attend and make comment regarding the overall discussion and to help inform the Planning Commission on as they deliberate on the issue. And I think it might be good to let Mr. Lifick confirm that, but it sounded like that was a pretty strong date for the 2nd.
Yeah, we're still in the process of finalizing that agenda and staff report, but it's the ink is almost drying on that as we speak. We propose to bring that discussion forward to our Planning Commission to help us with an interpretation of what a temporary building is. We don't have a definition in our code, and the public commenters talked about the way it's been traditionally interpreted in the past. So we're hoping to get further direction from our Planning Commission at that meeting. And welcome public comment at that time also.
Great. So that'd be 6 p.m.
6 p.m. at the Vets Hall, September 2nd.
Yeah. Great. Thank you very much.
Great follow-up. Thanks for that. Anybody else? Christine?
Yes, thanks. I think I'd like to just ask a follow-up question for that since we did have quite a bit of public comment on this particular item. So just for process, because I think that's always curious how governments do process. So, Mr. Levitt, could you just remind us that if this issue that deals with interpretation of the municipal code, that it would start in the it would start in Planning Commission, and then there quite possibly could be recommendations from the Planning Commission for it to come to the council, or things could be resolved there. Could you talk a little bit about the process as things come forward, like we've seen tonight, the issues brought forward to the council? Talk to us a little bit about the process of how things go.
At this point, we're not proposing to change the code. We're proposing to have the public and the Planning Commission help us with that code interpretation. Right now, like I said, there is no definition in our code for what a temporary building is. If you look at most typical garden sheds, they do look like temporary structures. So we're hoping to resolve that and to get a interpretation in our policy interpretations that we can use from here on out. As we move forward with our general plan, LCP update, it'll make its way into the implementation document, which is the zoning code.
Okay, that was clear to me. Hopefully it'll be. If it's not clear to the public, I guess they can follow up with you for further explanation.
772-6261. You can get to me or Scott Graham, our planning manager, for more discussion.
Okay. Thanks very much. Thanks.
Thanks for that. Thanks for the clarification.
Quick question for Rob. Since we have many, many older homes, very old homes in Morro Bay, which have structures like you've mentioned, garden sheds and other things, will there be possibly a provision for grandfathering things that are already built or have been built before homes or after homes or whatever?
Well, everything was subject to some code that's probably still existing at the time. So yes, there are grandfathering provisions. So if it was built old and it complied with the code of the day, it's grandfathered. This is a interpretation that we would move forward for those temporary structures and really help us with the code enforcement and hopefully eliminate the code enforcement issue in this case.
And with that, if there's no more further questions, then we can move on to our next item on the agenda, and that is consent. Our consent agenda are items that are normal courses of business, and anybody who'd like to speak to any item on consent may do so now. Please come forward, state your name. You have 3 minutes to speak. Seeing none, I'll close consent and bring it back to council. And just to start off, I was going to pull item A10, which is the review of the approval of a contract with David Buckingham Services as the city manager. Are there any other items that would be requested to pull?
I'd like to just ask a clarification on A9. If we just if we don't make any changes to the recommendation, that we would be signing on in favor of the resolution trying to address illegal marijuana grows. Am I correct on that, or do we need to pull that for our approval?
It's option one as it's written, but why don't we just go ahead and prove that? Or excuse me, why don't we just go ahead and pull that for that discussion?
Okay, I'll pull A9 then.
Okay, thanks, Noah, for doing that.
I would also ask if, you know, because of the importance and interest in the dispatch discussion, would we want to pull that and give Chief Christie and Chief Knuckles a chance?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks for doing that as well.
Okay,
that was a good call. A7?
So I'll move approval if there's no other items to approve all items on consent outside of A7, 9, and 10.
Second.
We have a motion by Noah, a second by Christine. Any discussion? Seeing none, say all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Item A7, that'd be a good one for catching us up. Thanks for doing that, Noah. And that would be regional dispatch transition update. And Chief Christie, would you be able to help us with that, or Chief Knuckles?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I included a report as to the status of the transition of dispatching services to the Sheriff's Office and CAL FIRE, sort of as an informational to kind of keep everybody apprised of the things that we're doing to prepare ourselves for the transition. On the legal side, of course, we're working on the contract, but on the work side, we're working on systems, different technology systems that we have to make sure can talk to each other and that information can flow from Morro Bay and to the other places it's going to go and back again. We had our last a meeting today, actually, that went very well with our law partners, and our technology upgrades are going very well. We have a lot of systems already in place. And tomorrow we're going to test some of the radio frequencies, the two alternative frequencies that we have. And on Friday we're going to see, again, where we are with the transition. We're also working with all of our employees to train them into the new systems. And we're actually doing training at the police department this week, Thursday, Friday. And we expect things to keep moving along, and we'll update as things change.
Thanks for that. Any other response?
Does Chief Knuckles, do you want to add anything? Or I just wasn't sure if it was a team approach or you identified a leader already.
Basically, we're doing the same exact thing. We're also working with Harbor Department and also with Coast Guard. We're all working together on coming up with the frequency, and they also call private line tones so that we're all dispatched at different times and together. We're working on the technology portion with rip and run capabilities for that rip and run station within our fire station. And we're also working on technology to get our mobile data up and running. We are having a full department training both for Fire Harbor and some representation from the Coast Guard on Thursday. And we've also been testing our tones and radio frequencies throughout the community and within the county.
Great, thanks. Any other questions?
If you would allow a follow-up. I received a number of emails from the public, and the public is quite aware of how things have been done, and I want to thank both of you. I saw responses on what happens if we call our non-emergency number now. Where will those calls go? That was still had some clarification on that item even after our August 11th meeting. And then also some more technical and some contractual concerns in the community. So I just wanted to say that I think that what I've seen by being copied on those emails, the ones that have come to me, I appreciate the depth of knowledge and detail you've replied to each individual community member. I think it makes a big difference for people to have confidence this is the right choice for us moving forward, even though many folks did say, I think this is the right choice, but I have these questions. So thanks a lot for answering that, because I think when you take time to answer one person's question, they're sharing that knowledge.
Second by Noah. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Item A9, discussion and direction on League of California Cities. And, I know there's some recommendations as far as we have some alternatives. And Noah, you brought the question forward on, what would the alternatives be on this? And as it's laid out in our staff report, to support resolution number one, even though there are some alternatives. And I don't know if there are some comments from staff on this or if you want to supply any more questions. Noah?
No, I just wanted to ensure that we are going to support resolution number one, which is an attempt to reduce the negative impacts of illegal marijuana grows, mostly in state and publicly owned properties throughout the state. And just be clear that we are fully in support of that, and I'm glad staff is as well.
Okay, any other comments? So just for the next step on this information-wise, so at the League of California Cities, which will be happening next week, there's an annual conference, and the League of California Cities, where all the member cities will be joined at this annual conference, myself as the voting delegate, as well as all the other cities, will be voting for this particular resolution, which means that the body of the League of California Cities endorses this resolution at the state level, and the League of California Cities will maintain their support for that and lobby for that and keep those cities abreast of that. And I'm looking towards Mr. Pannoni if he wanted to add any more information on the League of California Cities and how this resolution and how the League of California Cities will support a resolution at a conference in next week.
Yeah, the conference is an annual conference, and the league is made up of basically all the cities in California, except maybe a few from Orange County that decided to back out of the league. So there's about 470 cities that participate in the League of California Cities, and it's an organization that's been around for 110 years or so, and it's a collective effort of cities because a lot of things that happen in one city happen in another city, and so there's a concerted effort to help each other with knowledge. And when there's important items that affect the entire city organizations throughout the city, the league takes a position, but they don't take a position by the board deciding something. They take a position by each of the cities who participate deciding whether or not they want to have the league take a position. And if they do, then they have a legislative lobbyist that assists with getting something passed through the legislature. They have contact with the legislators. So it's a very significant network group that helps cities operate for local control.
Thank you for that. And as perhaps state legislation starts moving downward on local cities, this body is also present in their lobbyist position and this city as a member to help convey a message at the state level that we may be supporting or not supporting a state legislator that affects us. So it's a pretty important body and to participate with, and that's a little bit of history on that. So with that, I'm ready to entertain a motion.
Okay. Well, just want to say thanks for representing us there, and I'll move that we approve staff's recommendation supporting resolution number one at the League of California Cities Annual Conference.
Second.
We have a motion by Noah, a second by Nancy. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. And then item A10. Let's see. I move to pull that item. This is the item for the contract of our Let's see here where we are. Let me pull this back up. 810 is the review and approval of a contract with David Buckingham for services as a city manager. And this is the contract that this body will vote to approve tonight. For informational purposes, you know, at our last city council meeting, this council reported out from closed session a unanimous support for Mr. Buckingham as the city's new city manager. Today, as required by law, his contract will be voted on by this council in open session. Any future amendments to his contract will and shall come to this city council in regular or special council meeting and be approved in open session. That's what's required by law. So tonight we're just taking that exercise of approving the contract in open session. I'd also like to thank the citizens and the city manager panel in assisting council in the selection. I would also like to thank staff and our employees throughout this last year for their
insurance coverage that provides certain beneficial severance packages to city managers. And the contract that was before you that I prepared included a waiver of those benefits. But last week, the CJPIA sent out a notice saying they were changing some of the language in that form. So they want us to specifically identify by title, and they changed the title from what it used to be. So there's a minor modification that's on your dais, basically on page 13, subdivision 5, that just makes it clear that the waiver is for that benefit, and the benefit is now identified as the CJPIA says it has to be.
Great, and we have a copy of that, and for the record, do you need to read that into the record? I think it's pretty simple. Thanks for bringing that forward. Is there any other discussion, or would there be a motion to support? Nancy?
I have some comments, I'm afraid. I really feel the need to address this based on concerns from Morro Bay citizens that I have received since I voted to hire Mr. Buckingham. I've gotten a lot of emails and concerns from citizens about just various things that I won't go into tonight. And while I won't change my original vote, I can't vote yes on this contract as it currently stands. I also got emails about the contract and some of the things in it. I believe in giving Mr. Buckingham the benefit of the doubt. Yes, I wish to go on record as being concerned and voting no tonight. And that's it.
If I may, if it's possible, if you were to explain to me what the issues were with the contract, maybe we could make some minor modifications, or we could explain it so that you and the public understand what the documents.
You know what, I didn't bring them with me, but I know Mr. Krein's got them, and several, I think everybody got them from one of our former council members.
And he responded to all of those.
Yeah, but I still have concerns. I'm sorry. Just based on input that I got from the people I represent. And I feel I have to represent the people who elected me.
Thanks, Nancy. Anybody else for the discussion? No?
Yeah, yes, I did want to give Mr. Krein's a chance just to briefly review the financial component. I know we've received some questions and there's been some comments about the cost to the city, and given there is a component where Mr. Buckingham comes vested with insurance due to his military service, there's some subtleties there, and we have an outline in the staff report outlining that, but I wanted to give Mr. Krein a chance to discuss, you know, the total cost of the city in relation to what the position was previously budgeted as.
Yeah, I don't, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I'm not going to go into all the details unless you ask specific questions about it. The one that Councilmember Smuckler is referring to is the total cost of the city of Morro Bay versus what was budgeted in the budget for the 2014-15 fiscal year. The cost to the city, this is total cost, not to Mr. Buckingham necessarily, but total cost, including all benefits and retirement costs and so on, to the city is $199,183, the amount that was budgeted for the city manager's position in this fiscal year was $229,126, a difference of $30,000. And the reason that it's a difference of $30,000 primarily, there's two elements that really affect this. One of the elements is the public employee retirement system costs. Mr. Buckingham will come in a third tier. The council previously had changed their tier structure. As example, the current staff is in the first tier, first level of the PERS costs. In the case of the city manager, it would run about 22% of base on top of the base. With Mr. Buckingham's case, because he will be a new employee and a new under the public employee retirement system, he will come in and the cost of the city is only 6.25%, which is a savings of about $30,000 to the city over what it would have cost previously. The other element that I have been asked about several times is the deferred compensation element. Mr. Buckingham will furnish his own health insurance, and as a result of that, there's a savings, additional savings to the city. It's listed, and some people were concerned about why is he receiving $17,500 in deferred compensation. Well, it would cost the city $22,000 if he just came in and said, I want your health insurance. So the city is saving $4,500 in health costs for Mr. Buckingham versus a new hire. If you hired someone else, they would come in and ask for...
George or Christine? Christine?
Thank you. Well, I'm glad to have a moment to talk about the contract and about Mr. Buckingham. I think that I would like to address, as Nancy mentioned, there was one email that we all received. I didn't receive any more than this on the contract. Perhaps others did. There were the timing of the two issues that then when I responded to the email that came to light for me and for the person mentioning it, what the timing of an evaluation and the timing of the goal setting for the city manager. So what I'd like to talk about in regard to an evaluation is the point was made, well, if you evaluate in January, then you may have two or three or five, well, I suppose not five, but you might have potentially new council members who would be seated in December and not necessarily be prepared to do a full evaluation of a city and city manager who may have been there for a year or more prior. What I see, first of all, in regard to evaluations is that, as we all know in this community, that traditionally city manager position was evaluated in October, but there's no reason that if you have a majority of agreement on the council, you can't change that and be flexible with that date. So for me, having sat in the position where I had to wait 6 months until I was able to take my position on the council due to the June election, I was able to come to the meetings and get up to speed on a lot of the items that were being discussed. So I think that in this case, for this particular year, that would also be a case for folks who would be newly coming on in December. And even if that wasn't the case, if there were an election that was decided in November and the new candidates would take their seat in December, and then they would have a chance to at least state their goals for the city based on the city goals that have been set out through the previous council. But it's a way to just check in with the city manager because things do change in cities every 2 years. There's no way around that. So I think it's, for me, I look at it as a January check-in at least every other year, because you wouldn't always have an election year. It would be every other year. So I would look at that as something that would be helpful for the city manager when you're dealing with perhaps a change in tone of five people. The other thing is you can always then, with the city manager at that meeting and with your council colleagues, you can set up different kinds of benchmarks and different kinds of timelines for evaluation. So I think that, for me, I understand the question about it, but I'm just responding that I think we can all be flexible, and I think councils have been, and we will continue to do so. And then the other item that came back to me after the initial question was about the goal setting. And again, I think it's something similar that, depending upon the timing, sometimes we want to get things done in a certain month, but other things kind of come on the agenda. So I think that ultimately, the council has the freedom and the leeway to set goals and to evaluate as the council feels is needed, and that flexibility is in the contract. And I think that we will be watching for that kind of flexibility because there will be new council members coming on in December and then a new city manager here as well. So we'll want to make sure we check in January, which I think is only fair to everyone. So at that being said, I would just, you know, I think we haven't said too much about Mr. Buckingham, but aside from him, my own personal support of bringing him on as a city manager for Morro Bay, there are certain things that he's done in his career that are really admirable, and I do think that he's had a 26-plus year in the military, and I think that's something that I'm grateful for. He's also the son of someone who had 30 years of service in the military, so that comes with a long pedigree of service for him and his family, so I appreciate that and look forward to him working here, and I fully support, unless we can discuss some of the issues that, Nancy, you have brought forward in this contract, I can't imagine why we would postpone the discussion for another 2 weeks when, if you've got issues, we need to discuss those now. This is the item for the contract. So I'd like to hear if you have particular issues like the two I just mentioned were in response to a constituent's email. So if you have things like that, too, I think we should air them out tonight and resolve it and vote on it, and then this community can move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great.
I did say that I had some questions concerning the contract, and I know Mr. Kreins had answered most of those to the best of his ability, but that's not the major reason I'm voting no. That's just it. I mean, I don't see any point in continuing this for another 2 weeks. I just wanted to be on the record that because of comments and questions and concerns I have received from the people who voted for me, the people I represent in this city, that I will be going on record as voting no. That being said, I will work.
Thank you.
Okay. So I would also make a motion to include the amendment that was discussed as presented in this meeting. And that amendment was on page 13, paragraph subsection 5. And for the record, so would you second that
I'll
as well?
I'll second that
okay,
also.
Okay, so we have a second for my amendment to the motion. And seeing no more discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 4-1. Nancy dissenting. Okay, at this point, we can move on to the next item on the agenda. And we'll be moving on to new business items, item D1. And let me get to that item. Item D1 is the approval of direct to the public off-the-boat fish sales in Morro Bay at various city public docking facilities. And this would be Mr. Endersby.
Thank you, and good evening, Mayor and Council. This item came through our Harbor Advisory Board through several of our commercial fishermen wanting to sell their catch off of their boats. Currently, their real only option at this time to sell their catch off their boats is to sell them in their slips. For some of those fishermen, that works great. For others, not so much. Kind of depends on where they are and what sort of visibility they have and what sort of advertising they're able to get in. So several of our fishermen last year, I think in March, came to the Harbor Advisory Board and brought it up as an issue. We had the Harbor Advisory Board consider it in May, and they recommended that the City Council allow our commercial fishermen to sell their catch off of their boats, provided they're in compliance with all of their state and federal laws. The two main issues that they have to comply with now, they have to have a resale license from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and they also have to be in compliance with any health department regulations. Typically, if they're just selling their catch in the round, which is basically a whole fish or maybe a gutted and gilled fish, there's not much regulation there. If they're cleaning and filleting or doing any sort of processing, it adds on a whole other layer. Most, if not all, of our fishermen are just giving the fish in the round. The Harbor Advisory Board asked about several locations, and the fishermen asked about several locations, from our piers to our street end docks, you know, in between our restaurants at various locations. Tidelands Dock, obviously, is one of the more obvious ones. And then one of the questions that came up from a couple of our commercial fishermen is, you know, if this gets approved, does that preclude us from doing this in our docks? And the answer is no. It's still allowing them to do it in their docks and slips. It would just be giving them an extra option of doing it from some of our public facilities. And the advantage there, I think, again, is the idea of if it would coalesce to where most people are selling at a given dock at a given location, if they could even rule it down to a given time or day of the week and make some consistency, it might help the sales in general for everybody rather than just sort of the piecemeal, you go to this slip, you go to that slip, you go to that dock. The hope is that maybe an overall area, one-stop shopping, could sort of congeal and over a period of time, and the public generally knows that you go there to go buy fish. They may not know exactly what they may be able to buy, depending on the season, but the hope is that it will establish a little more stability for some of the folks. And some of our fishermen are perfectly happy staying in their slips and probably will and won't use a public dock, so that option would still remain open. The advisory board also recommended, as our rules and regulations currently state, that it would require prior approval of the Harbor Department. Generally, that's a verbal approval. That being in that if we had an event or some other issue or some other thing going on at a given public dock that they wanted to sell at least we would know and be able to advise and work around that if possible. And then the Harbor Advisory Board also recommended sort of a trial one-year period to see how it would work. If it didn't work out well for the fishermen and they didn't really engage in it and it didn't help, and it was not an issue for the Harbor Department, I would imagine the issue would just die. If there were some issues but they wanted to keep on working with it, we could review it in a year and see if we needed to make some modifications. Or if it worked gangbusters for the fishermen and was no issues for us or for the public using the dock, didn't interfere with the normal use of whatever dock they end up at, we could continue on allowing it for a time, you know, indefinite. So we're recommending supporting the Harbor Advisory Board's recommendation of allowing those uses off of our public docks to where the fishermen can sell their catch off of a dock, and hopefully it'll my vision, at least my hope, would be that, like a couple other ports to our north, I think Pillar Point being one, and they've really used that Fishline app to their advantage where folks look online and they know that, okay, I can go to, you know, Captain Bob and he's selling crab, or Captain Fred, he's selling salmon, but it's all in the same location, which I think will help if it can work out this way. So that's where we are. Hopefully you've read your staff report, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Great, Eric. Thanks. Any questions? To the left, George, Christine.
I was just wondering about a business license.
Yeah,
how that works now on the dock, and if that would ever come up. We've had issues with that recently on the Embarcadero.
Yeah, and that was a good question you asked me earlier.
Enough tracking for your department to, you know, be able to follow where the different options are lying, and, you know, make sure that you have it all in one place.
Yeah,
and yet not create a major, if you took it to a next step, create a, you know, another bureaucratic level that might be a burden.
Our approval in the past, and it's been a while since anybody asked. When it first started, it's been probably mid to late 90s is when it really started catching on. And there are health department issues that came up. And it eventually got written into our rules and regulations because I think it was prohibited before. At that time, our fishermen were pretty good at contacting us and finding out and making sure that they got their approval. Other than one instance or one issue that came up between two adjacent fishermen that's long since been resolved, I can only recall that one problem, quote-unquote, ever occurring when they were selling at their slip, so it was never an issue. At the public docks, the only issue that I can foresee is that we're not precluding the public use of that dock. On our street ends, they're fairly low use anyhow. You know, the three that we have by the galley and Roses and the one down by Libertine Pub, they're fairly low use docks. I would think personally that the best place would be Tidelands, just because it's got parking, it's very visible, it's got easy walking access. It makes the most sense to me. And there's a fair amount of space. I don't expect we're going to have 20 commercial fishing boats any given day taking up that whole dock and precluding the rest of the public being there. I just don't see it. A number of our slip holders are just going to stay in their slips because it works well for them. So we'll have to be a little more diligent in making sure that they are checking in with us and making sure that, you know, we know what they're doing, they know what our issues are, but I don't foresee any major issues with it.
A couple questions, Eric. Thanks for the report. You know, in past we've had I've had emails, calls from other businesses on the waterfront about weekend vendors, and doing business. And so I think that's something the city has explored as well. So the thing about the business license is curious to me, and I think, you know, it seems like there's support for this, but I think it'd be simple for you to come back at our next council meeting and give us an update on the requirements of the business license, unless there's some other response to that. And in light of some of the comments we had earlier tonight about rules and regulations, what you have in place fairly well outlines everything. But do you feel comfortable when you're talking about going to Tidelands Park? And since I was there just last night walking, you know, that area, I mean, there's fish carcass all over because, you know, and I know that's an item of work that the Harvard Department is working on as far as managing and rebuilding that fish cleaning area, but it doesn't do the job for the seagulls getting in there, and, you know, it's quite a mess. So are we going to be able to manage that, and is there going to be anything in there as this, you know, I understand in a year we're going to come back and revisit this, but, you know, the issue of heavy use down there, just maintaining the regular cleanliness, and basically safety and health for that area. So just can you speak to that?
Yeah, I wouldn't anticipate any sort of carcass or fish waste issues or uncleanliness issues. You know, I'll throw a couple of names out. Mark Tognazzini, he probably sells, you know, on a good salmon year, you know, probably tens, you know, maybe not tens of thousands, but thousands of pounds of salmon off his boat,
yeah.
And it's not an issue
and
there.
I bought
them. Jeremiah O'Brien down
yeah.
at the launch ramp.
Yeah.
He's definitely tens of thousands of albacore at the end of the year. Guys are wheeling them up and down through wagons they bring or whatever. It's because it's fish in the round. It's in, with albacore, it's frozen. Salmon, not. And salmon's already cleaned and gutted. Like I said, the if they fillet, they can. It's a sort of a technicality. They can fillet the fish and clean the fish for the customer. The customer's got to buy it first. But it requires, the health department requires more sanitation standards, even when you do that, that most of the commercial fishermen just, it's not worth it to them. And most of the folks that buy fish in the round, they're okay cleaning them, even the whole albacore. The folks that buy albacore whole, they're fine cleaning them. So it's never been a carcass issue on any of our slips that anybody have done it on. The off-the-boat sales, and the few that have processed on the boat, they've dealt with them accordingly. And I don't anticipate any sort of sanitary issues or uncleanliness issues.
Okay. At this time, I'll open up for public comment. Anybody like to speak to this item may do so now. Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back for discussion. I think I sense the general support for this. I think, you know, we have the recommendation from the Harvard Department to revisit this in a year. And so was the question whether or not that would come back. Any discussion?
Just very, very brief. I think the reason we're pulling out, for me, the business license issue is because the city's just contracted with a company to help us get our business licenses in order, and I think we're going to be hearing about that from other businesses. So it's not anything. I know that the fishermen have a lot of their own hoops to jump through. I understand that completely. It's not to add something else to them. It's just to be consistent with what we're doing in the city. I think it's going to come up. So if we have a policy prior to establishing it, I think we'll all be happier. Thanks.
Great point. Thanks. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. 5-0. Moving on to declaration of future agenda items. And we'll open it up for council future agenda items.
I have a couple.
Noah?
Okay. First is a staff review of the Beach Street specific plan and parking management plan with a report to the council on options to address specifically parking in the Beach Street district and area, similar to the parking exception on North Main. And that was the ordinance number 578. I had a chance to talk with our planning manager, Mr. Graham, about that, and he's familiar with it. And so the idea would be bring this information back to us to decide if we want to take any action. And there would be a little more detail from his report.
Okay, and that conversation, Mr. Livick, is, you know, we have that 578 ordinance coming next council meeting as well?
Yes, for some minor procedural clarifications.
Okay, and any comments on, you know, the workload as far as the Beach Street specific plan and kind of addressing this?
It's just the Beach Street. I'll get it out. The Beach Street specific plan has gone to Planning Commission once, based on previous discussions about bringing back all the specific plans to be reviewed by the Planning Commission. We did not have any public at that meeting, so we're going to Planning Commission asked us to do more active outreach to the neighborhood to see if we could get neighborhood and then re-notice that meeting. So it is kind of winding through the Planning Commission process. So it would follow from there back up to City Council if we want to use that approach, or we could bring it back to City Council for this specific parking issue to be then sent back down to Planning Commission.
Okay. And this is a Beach Street specific plan, NOAA, and then tied with a parking management plan just to address the parking issues as it was addressed in the North Main specific plan. Is that right?
Under the ordinance number 578, okay, on North Main, yes.
Okay.
And specific to parking, I fully I don't want to interrupt the process with 578 on North Main. And I wouldn't want to interrupt the effort on the more global picture of the Beach Street specific plan. This is an isolated item, and in talking with Mr. Graham, he felt like not a lot of work on his part to bring back a report on some options for us.
Okay, great. I'd be supportive of that. Is there any other comments from Nancy or in support of that?
I'll support it if I can. I live very close to the Beach Street, and I live in the Beach Street specific area, so I would be happy to support it if it's allowable.
Sure.
George?
Christine, George and I.
Have unanimous support on that?
Great, thank you.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay, second item came out of a discussion I had with Brent Haugen of the Tourism Bureau. And it's a request to the Tourism Bureau to provide us with a presentation at the City Council meeting reviewing efforts from the Lodging and Tourism Bureau on water conservation within the city. And he was enthusiastic about that idea, and his only caveat was that he'd like to provide that presentation before September 30th, if possible.
So just a presentation?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's pretty simple as far as
I would support a presentation.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you. I would.
But
guess,
you know what? I should ask this: is it able to? Are we able to do that within the timeline specified by Mr. Haugen? September? Are we able to get it in September?
I think we do have the availability on the agenda to do presentation. We just advise them, you know, the
okay,
time constraints
sure
of that.
Nobody else. Coming.
I think we were pretty flexible this evening on
very
our
lenient
presentations,
yeah,
and given the